Chapter 53. How should I greet thee? Apostrophe apostrophe, love frequently dies of time alone, much more frequently of displacement. With Elfright Swankert, a powerful reason why the displacement should be successful was that the newcomer was a greater man than the first. By the side of the instructive and piquant snubbings she received from Knight, Stephen's general agreeableness seemed watery. By the side of Knight's spare lovemaking, Stephen's continual outflow seemed lackadaisical. As he had begun to sigh for somebody further on in manhood, Stephen was hardly enough of a man. Perhaps there was a proneness to inconstancy in her nature, a nature, to those who contemplate it from a standpoint beyond the influence of that inconstancy, the most exquisite of all in its plasticity and ready sympathies. Partly, too, Stephen's failure to make his hold on her heart a permanent one was his too timid habit of dispraising himself beside her, a peculiarity which, exercised towards sensible men, stirs a kindly chord of attachment that a marked assertiveness would leave untouched, but inevitably leads the most sensible woman in the world to undervalue him who practices it. Directly domineering ceases in the man, snubbing begins in the woman. The trite but no less unfortunate fact being that the gentler creature rarely has the capacity to appreciate fair treatment from her natural complement. The abiding perception of the position of Stephen's parents had, of course, a little to do with Elfright's renunciation. To such girls, poverty may not be, as to the more worldly masses of humanity, a sin in itself, but it is a sin because graceful and dainty manners seldom exist in such an atmosphere. Few women of old family can be thoroughly taught that a fine soul may wear a smock frock, and an admittedly common man in one is but a worm in their eyes. John Smith's rough hands and clothes, his wife's dialect, the necessary narrowness of their ways, being constantly under Elfright's notice, were not without their deflecting influence. On reaching home after the perilous adventure by the seashore, Knight had felt unwell, and retired almost immediately. The young lady who had so materially assisted him had done the same, but she reappeared, properly clothed, about 5 o'clock. She wandered restlessly about the house, but not on account of their joint narrow escape from death. The storm which had torn the tree had merely bowed the reed, and with the deliverance of Knight all deep thought of the accident had left her. The mutual avowal which it had been the means of precipitating occupied a far longer length of her meditations. Elfright's disquiet now was on account of that miserable promise to meet Stephen, which returned like a specter again and again. The perception of his littleness beside Knight grew upon her alarmingly. She now thought how sound had been her father's advice to her to give him up, and was as passionately desirous of following it as he had hitherto been averse. Perhaps there is nothing more hardening to the tone of young minds than thus, to discover how their dearest and strongest wishes become gradually attuned by time the cynic to the very note of some selfish policy which in earlier days they despised. The hour of appointment came, and with it a crisis, and with the crisis a collapse. God forgive me, I can't meet Stephen. Apostrophe apostrophe, she exclaimed to herself. I don't love him less, but I love Mr. Knight more. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. She would save herself from a man not fit for her in spite of vows. She would obey her father, and have no more to do with Stephen Smith. Thus the fickle resolve showed signs of assuming the complexion of a virtue. The following days were passed without any definite avowal from Knight's lips. Such solitary walks and scenes as that witnessed by Smith in the summer house were frequent, but he courted her so intangibly that to any but such a delicate perception as Elfright's it would have appeared no courtship at all. The time now really began to be sweet with her. She dismissed the sense of sin in her past actions, and was automatic in the intoxication of the moment. The fact that Knight made no actual declaration was no drawback. Knowing since the betrayal of his sentiments, that love for her really existed. She preferred it for the present in its form of essence, and was willing to avoid for a while the grosser medium of words. Their feelings having been forced to a rather premature demonstration, a reaction was indulged in by both. But no sooner had she got rid of her troubled conscience on the matter of faithlessness than a new anxiety confronted her. It was lest Knight should accidentally meet Stephen in the parish, and that herself should be the subject of discourse. Elfride, learning Knight more thoroughly, perceived that, far from having a notion of Stephen's precedence, he had no idea that as he had ever been wooed before by anybody. On ordinary occasions as he had a tongue so frank as to show her whole mind, and a mind so straightforward as to reveal her heart to its innermost shrine. But the time for a change had come. She never alluded to even the knowledge of Knight's friend. When women are secret, they are secret indeed. And more often than not, they only begin to be secret with the advent of a second lover. The elopement was now a specter worse than the first, and, like the spirit in Glenfinlas, it waxed taller with every attempt to lay it. Her natural honesty invited her to confide in Knight, and trust to his generosity for forgiveness. She knew also that as mere policy it would be better to tell him early, if he was to be told at all. The longer her concealment, the more difficult would be the revelation. But she put it off. The intense fear which accompanies intense love in young women was too strong to allow the exercise of a moral quality antagonistic to itself. Where love is great, the littlest doubts are fear. Where little fears grow great, great love grows there. The match was looked upon as made by her father and mother. The vicar remembered her promise to reveal the meaning of the telegram as he had received, and 2 days after the scene in the summer house, asked her pointedly. She was frank with him now. "I had been corresponding with Stephen Smith ever since he left England, till lately," she calmly said. "What?" cried the vicar aghast. "Under the eyes of Mr. Knight too?" "No. When I found I cared most for Mr. Knight, I obeyed you." "You were very kind, I'm sure. When did you begin to like Mr. Knight?" "I don't see that that is a pertinent question, Papa. The telegram was from the shipping agent, and was not sent at my request. It announced the arrival of the vessel bringing him home." "Home? What, is he here?" "Yes, in the village, I believe." "Has he tried to see you?" "Only by fair means." "But don't, Papa, question me so. It is torture." "I will only say one word more," he replied. "Have you met him?" "I have not. I can assure you that at the present moment there is no more of an understanding between me and the young man you so much dislike than between him and you. You told me to forget him, and I have forgotten him." "Well, though you did not obey me in the beginning, you are a good girl, Elfride, in obeying me at last." "Don't call me Ood, Papa," she said bitterly. "You don't know, and the less said about some things the better. Remember, Mr. Knight knows nothing about the other." "Oh, how wrong it all is. I don't know what I am coming to. As matters stand, I should be inclined to tell him, or, at any rate, I should not alarm myself about his knowing. He found out the other day that this was the parish young Smith's father lives in. What puts you in such a flurry?" "I can't say, but promise, pray, don't let him know. It would be my ruin." "Pooh, child. Knight is a good fellow and a clever man, but at the same time it does not escape my perceptions that he is no great catch for you. Men of his turn of mind are nothing so wonderful in the way of husbands. If you had chosen to wait, you might have mated with a much wealthier man. But remember, I have not a word to say against your having him, if you like him. Charlotte is delighted, as you know. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, Papa, apostrophe she said, smiling hopefully through a sigh, it is nice to feel that in giving way to caring for him, I have pleased my family. But I am not good. Oh no, I am very far from that. Apostrophe apostrophe, none of us are good, I am sorry to say, apostrophe said her father blandly. But girls have a chartered right to change their minds, you know. It has been recognized by poets from time immemorial. Catullus says, Mulier cupido quod dicit amanti, invento apostrophe what a memory mine is. However, the passage is, that a woman's words to a lover, are as a matter of course written only on wind and water. Now don't be troubled about that, Elfride. Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, you don't know. Apostrophe apostrophe, they had been standing on the lawn, and Knight was now seen lingering some way down a winding walk. When Elfride met him, it was with a much greater lightness of heart. Things were more straightforward now. The responsibility of her fickleness seemed partly shifted from her own shoulders to her father's. Still, there were shadows. Ah, could he have known, how far I went with Stephen, and yet have said the same, how much happier I should be. Apostrophe apostrophe, that was her prevailing thought. In the afternoon the lovers went out together on horseback for an hour or two, and though not wishing to be observed, by reason of the late death of Lady Luxellian, whose funeral had taken place very privately on the previous day, they yet found it necessary to pass East and Delstow Church. The steps to the vault, as has been stated, were on the outside of the building, immediately under the aisle wall. Being on horseback, both Knight and Elfride could overlook the shrubs which screened the churchyard. Look, the vault seems still to be open, apostrophe said Knight. Yes, it is open, apostrophe she answered, who is that man close by it? The mason, I suppose? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe apostrophe, I wonder, if it is John Smith, Stephen's father? Apostrophe apostrophe, I believe it is, apostrophe said Elfride, with apprehension. Ah, and can it be? I should like to inquire how his son, my truant protege, is going on. And from your father's description of the vault, the interior must be interesting. Suppose we go inches apostrophe apostrophe, had we better, do you think? May not Lord Luxellian be there? Apostrophe, it is not at all likely. Apostrophe apostrophe, Elfride then assented, since she could do nothing else. Her heart, which at first, had quailed in consternation, recovered itself when she considered the character of John Smith. A quiet unassuming man, he would be sure to act towards her, as before those love passages with his son, which might have given a more pretentious mechanic airs. So without much alarm she took Knight's arm after dismounting, and went with him between and over the graves. The master mason recognized her as she approached, and, as usual, lifted his hat respectfully. I know you to be Mr. Smith, my former friend Stephen's father, apostrophe said Knight, directly he had scanned the embrand and ruddy features of John. Yes, sir, I believe I be. Apostrophe apostrophe, how is your son now? I have only once heard from him, since he went to India. I dare say you have heard him speak of me, Mr. Knight, who became acquainted with him some years ago in Exonbury. Apostrophe apostrophe, that I have. Stephen is very well, thank you, sir, and he's in England. In fact, he's at home. In short, sir, he's down in the vault there, looking at the departed coffins. Apostrophe apostrophe, Elfride's heart fluttered like a butterfly. Knight looked amazed. Well, that is extraordinary. Apostrophe he murmured. Did he know I was in the parish? Apostrophe apostrophe, I really can't say, sir, apostrophe said John, wishing himself out of the entanglement he rather suspected than thoroughly understood. Would it be considered an intrusion by the family, if we went into the vault? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, bless ye, no, sir, scores of folk have been stepping down. 'Tis left open a purpose. Apostrophe apostrophe, we will go down, Elfride. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am afraid Pierre is close. Apostrophe, she said appealingly. Oh no, ma'am, apostrophe, said John. We white-limed the walls and arches the day it was opened, as we always do, and again on the morning of the funeral. The place is as sweet as a granary. Then I should like you to accompany me, Elfie, having originally sprung from the family too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't like going where death is so emphatically present. I'll stay by the horses whilst you go in. They may get loose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what nonsense. I had no idea your sentiments were so flimsily formed as to be perturbed by a few remnants of mortality. But stay out, if you are so afraid, by all means. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no, I am not afraid. Don't say that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she held miserably to his arm, thinking that, perhaps, the revelation might as well come at once as 10 minutes later, for Stephen would be sure to accompany his friend to his horse. At first, the gloom of the vault, which was lighted only by a couple of candles, was too great to admit of their seeing anything distinctly. But with a further advance night discerned, in front of the black masses lining the walls, a young man standing, and writing in a pocketbook. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.